You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, I'm Chris Manning here, and joining me as a little Locked On Cavs, Locked On Pacers, Extreme Midwest Energy crossover show, it's Tony East from Locked On Pacers. Tony, what's up, man?
Big Midwest energy. I've never heard that about myself before, but honestly, I mean, this is the podcast to talk about it, right? I'm doing great, to answer the question.
That's good. I'm doing great too. You know, making do. Did you guys get snow in your area? We got like the classic like early December Ohio snow. Have you guys got that little early winter yet or no?
We got the sleet, but it didn't really stick on the ground, which is good because I hate snow and sleet. It's all just awful. But I mean, you know the Midwest. What happens in Indy and what happens in Cleveland are somehow totally separate weather events, which makes no sense, but whatever.
Yeah, I believe the first time that we like did a crossover together, like however long ago, because time's like just a flat circle, like Russ Cole meme. I think we just like forgot that we were in different time zones, or like I forgot that you were in a different time zone in Indianapolis, and it was just like, yes, these are different time zones because. Time is weird. This country is weird. Yeah, just unfortunately complicated, even though like the states are like very close to each other and like not really that far for me to like drive to Indianapolis or vice versa. Like before it got moved, going to the All-Star game could have been like a fun thing to just like do in Indianapolis if I could get a credential, but alas. All right, so Cavs Pacers playing a little two-game series in Cleveland, first on Saturday and the second one on Monday. We'll be covering those again on both shows. So whatever, you know, team you're following, whatever show you're listening, I mean, check out both and get both sides of the equation here. But basketball is back. The Pacers obviously were in the bubble. The Cavs obviously were not. So different teams, different expectations for the season. One team has a new head coach. One team does not. Whole bunch of other changes, obviously, as well. What we're going to do is we're each going to ask each other three questions. We're going to go back and forth. I'm going to ask about the Pacers. Tony's going to ask me about the Cavs. And then we'll do that over the course of our three segments here on the show. Tony, you start. What's your first Cavs question that you're going to make me answer? And listeners, if you're a Pacers fan who's like the Cavs, just bear with us here.
Sure. So the big thing, the Sexland thing is what I love to talk about with the Cavs, because I was replying to Justin Rowan, enemy of the pod, friend of the pod. I don't know how you guys view Justin, but
friend of the pod, except when he like tells me that my opinions are not what they are about Colin Sexton. And I know he's listening. So hello, Justin.
So yeah, I replied to him about Darius Garland and what his stats could be this year. And he gave me a number way higher than I was anticipating, because I'm really high on Colin Sexton. He's really good. He was awesome for most of the second half of last season. And I don't know why, but in my head, you know, given that they have kind of some vetty front court players were going to need the ball, and KPJ was good last year and their bench is okay. Like, my expectations for Sexton made it impossible for me to see how Garland could get the stats that Justin suggested. Now it's possible. I mean, I'm not as plugged in as the Cavs as you all, but how do you see them growing and fitting together this year and beyond?
Well, I think the thing that helps with this is that they're different. They're like, even though they're like the same size, and I think that projects some long-term questions about kind of how you play them together, how you stagger them, or whatever you're going to do. I do think they're very different players. It's sort of like their core. Like Sexton, in my Fearless Word player preview that hasn't come out yet for him, but I'm going to give the listeners your tease. Tony, do you like know what like a fastball special is from the X-Men comics, where like Colossus will like chuck Wolverine like full speed, like into the air at an enemy? That's how Colin Sexton plays. Colin Sexton is just like this constant like ball of movement. He doesn't really stop. He's constantly just like doing stuff. And sometimes that really helps him, right? Sometimes that kind of enables him to be like a more effective cutter than I think people realize, and just kind of like have successes because he's just constantly kind of perpetual in motion and just kind of going at people all the time. It hurts sometimes when he's like running a pick and roll and he just is so eager to go that he doesn't wait for the screen to come, and like it becomes much easier to defend him. Garland is like the opposite guy in terms of he plays much more patiently. He's got a much more like smooth game where like he's not going to blow by you with that first step or kind of overpower you, but he's just going to kind of like handle you in a way that kind of showed that even like his numbers weren't good last year and he kind of had a weird rookie year. He clearly just has a really, really kind of old schooly kind of slow feel for the game. I think they both have good feels for what's going on. They just kind of go out there in different ways. I think what you're going to see is is going to be kind of the boring of the two. He's already a really good scorer, three-level scorer. I think if he can continue to improve as a pick in the pick and roll, as a pull-up shooter, I think that's kind of where his next evolution goes. You want a little more passing from him, because he's, if you want to put him among point guards, like he's in, and maybe he's more of a combo, but he's like the fourth worst assist percentage among all point guards in the league last year. And like, that's just not tenable for a guy that's going to have like an almost 30% usage rate. Like, that just has to change.
Right.
If he's going to have the ball in his hands that much, if you want to just have like a functional offense and like make Kevin Love and Andre Drummond like happy with what they're doing, Garland, I think, is going to get a really big chance to facilitate, kind of be the guy that's keeping everything in perpetual motion. And look, there's going to be some chemistry between them too, and we'll see how that plays out. One of the things, right, I think you'll see, last thing I'll say here is the Cavs developed this play, and it's not like a new play, but they ran this action when Dele and Jordan Clarkson would play together at the beginning of last year, and I think the end of the season before, where Clarkson would like set up off ball and he would do a quick back cut and like just move, and Dele would like throw a pass and Clarkson would get an easy 2 points. The Cavs then did that when they played Dele and Sexton together, where Dele would just do the same play basically. Sexton would like move around some screens or just do a quick cut and like get an easy 2 points. I think you're going to see them do that action a couple times a game, where Sexton is going to come down the floor, Garland's going to have the ball in his hands, and it's maybe not a set called play, but they're just going to know, like, okay, like instinctually, like we can get this really easy bucket because Sexton's a really good cutter. He's going to finish, maybe get fouled, and Garland's going to be able to put the pass where he needed to. So I think it's an open question about the long-term viability, but they're so different, I think you can kind of make them work. Does that satisfy you?
It does. The Sexton Garland comp that we're looking for is Dele Jordan Clarkson, right? There we go.
This is just that's offensive. That is rude. And
I'm obviously joking.
Yeah. No. Look, but salute to Jordan Clarkson for getting the bag. That's all I gotta say. Yeah. So the other thing I'll say, for me here is my question, and that was a terrible transition, but I apologize. But my first question is, what is Nate Bjorkson as a head coach? Like, you go from Nate McMillan, who I really liked, was always very impressed by, and just kind of his steadying hand, but you go to a Nick Nurse disciple, and it's his first year, it's a weird year and everything. What are you expecting for him? What are you expecting from him?
Yeah, with first-time coaches, it's kind of hard, right? You've never seen... He coached in the G League, so we can go, okay, this is what his minor league team looked like with Nate Bjorkman at the helm. But I have yet, you know, I can't make any sweeping statements about what I'm expecting on the court yet. I think this Cavs game, one of the things I'm most excited for, actually, is how does Nate Bjorkman coach the game? But I will say, we can marry up the things he says in press conferences with the way he coached in the G League and with the Raptors, and we can marry up the things that players are saying about him and kind of figure out what to expect from him. And it's kind of just going to be the opposite of Nate McMillan. Not like polar opposites, but Nate McMillan, right, former nickname of Sarge, does things by the book the same way every year. It's a really good way. He can make his players good. He puts some guys in, he puts his vets in the right situation to succeed. Not so much as young players, but and is able to make a solid team full of vets, overachieve by a few wins, and make the playoffs. And Bjorkgren is the opposite. He is the creative guy who gets guys into interesting situations and swaps things around. And maybe in the regular season, you experiment with a lineup that doesn't work as well, but come playoff time, now you've played and mixed and matched all these guys, and you're peaking at a different time. And you know, he apparently had a big hand in the box and one, right? The creative kind of defense that the Raptors did on Stephen Curry. Nate McMillan would have done drop coverage that entire game. Curry would have scored 50 points. If you'll recall, Klay Thompson's 60-point game with 11 dribbles was against, you guessed it, the Pacers. So that kind of switch is needed. He, Bjorkgren and Pressers, has described his defense and style as fun and disruptive, which I don't know how those are the same, but we'll see. I like that he uses interesting words like disruptive. I'm looking forward to seeing what that means. And on offense, as you've seen with the Pacers for years, you know, it's very readable, right? Like, I could tell you what they're running sometimes in the middle of a play, and I am not that good at X's and O's. I just see the same stuff over and over. Bjorkgren, I think, is going to be more creative, have more weeks. He said he's going to have more weak side cutting and work guys into more actions like that. And so Kevin Pritchard, the Pacers president of basketball operations, said the thing about Bjorkgren that just blew him away in his interview process was, like, they talked X's and O's and how this roster can fit and stuff he would do. And Pritchard, who played college basketball and even made the NBA, was like just blown away by his answers about the X's and O's. So instead of going for McMillan, who is kind of a team manager militant style, we're going to Bjorkgren, who is more like fun and do this fun, silly thing. And let's try this thing. And it's more creative and free flowing. And who knows if it'll be better or not, but given how McMillan was and how fans were very frustrated with the stalling of the team in that old era, fans are just every step of the way seem very refreshed by the things he's saying. The question always is with the new coach, are the things he's saying going to be the things he is doing? And we'll find that out pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how he coaches. I'm a big, big Nick Nurse fan. So if you have like that same Nick Nurse, like high level tinkerer and not like a bad kind of tinkerer energy, like I'm very, very into that as a head coach. And especially because like you, if you're trying to maximize, it would seem to me a team that maybe doesn't have like the guy. And I'll ask about the guy who has been on your mind, I'm sure, more than any player the last 6 months later on. Well,
ooh, Edmund Sumner, awesome.
Well, I told you before, we're going to talk a whole bunch of TJ Leaf and why that didn't work out content here on this podcast, because that's clearly what the people would want. But if you have like a guy where like he's going to maximize the guys you have, that seems to me like a really smart hire for a team like the Pacers. And I think that's kind of what the Cavs are going to hopefully get out of. I think they hope they're getting out of JB Bickerstaff as well in some ways. But Tony, you know what could help the Pacers and the Cavs kind of break through their walls before they get to this preseason game this weekend?
You know, I know the answer and I don't want to spoil it, so I'll just let you handle it.
It's Built Go. Built Go is this amazing, great tasting product. Comes into peanut butter, honey, chocolate, coconut, and chocolate mint. Comes in an easy 1.5 ounce package. So if you're an NBA player going to the arena and you need a little boost, you could just slide this in your bag, or your pocket even, and bring it into you in the arena, have it before the game, and you're good to go. Or if you're a normie like Tony and I, like, and you're going to do a podcast, like I, you know, you could just take this in the middle of the day if you didn't get a lot of sleep last night or whatever. Think of Built Go as a 5-hour energy, but without the same crash feeling. So it's natural and better for the body. If you didn't know, Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. It has a ton of great stuff like 10,000% of B6 and B12. And it's just has honey, a kick of caffeine, B3, and beta-alanine. It's all the good stuff that you need. Right now, visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED and you get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. We'll tease some shows here real quick as well. Just, you know, on Locked On Cavs, we're going to recap the games. And I got to say, that's all the tease you're going to get because we haven't got to do that in a long time. Tony, what's coming up on Locked On Pacers?
Yeah, same kind of deal. We're going to be breaking down. I mean, it's only one preseason game, but of course, we're going to talk about Nate Bjorkgren's debut, what we're learning from the Pacers. And as the preseason evolves, you know, they got the Sixers next week. We'll talk about what we're seeing from the Pacers and what can translate to the regular season. So a lot of the same stuff as you guys.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Right after this, we'll be back and we're going to ask some more questions about the Pacers and the Cavs right after this. All right, Chris Manning, Locked On Cavs here with Tony East from Locked On Pacers. All right, Tony, my next question, I don't want to like delay this one anymore. What the hell is going on with Victor Oladipo and what are you expecting from him?
I could just make gargling noises and not actually talk for the next 5 minutes, and we'd get the same net result.
Well, you could just give these non-answers that clearly indicate the thing you're denying are actually true, and just make it really awkward. You could do that too.
That's exactly what is happening. Yeah. I'll do the frustrating part for me as a media person first. Victor keeps saying in his media availabilities, I can't control the rumors. Well, actually, Vic, you can, and you are the only person who has the abilities to do so, and he keeps not. But anyway, what is up with Victor Oladipo is a great question. My take on it is as follows. Victor has eyes for maybe another team. I think he likes Indiana, but I think he has eyes for one other team a lot and a couple other teams a little that are preventing him from committing to Indiana. But his trade value, he realized, was incredibly low this offseason. And he just said, okay, I'm just going to stick around with this place that I like. He does like, again, I think he does actually like Indiana. He went to college here and the fans loved him for a while. And he wants to see if he can rehabilitate his value. And he does say that, you know, things about what team he's on and his contract status are not within his control. That's also true, right? The Pacers probably will not be offering him a maximum extension they can for $113 million because he was pretty bad last year. He is not worth that much money right now. And they can't once the season starts. So they're kind of relying on the advantage they'll have in free agency next year to keep him if he's awesome. And then the money will not be a thing that Victor Oladipo is saying it's not tying him to Indy. So given all the things he said, that's how I would like to marry up what I think to be his thought process. But he keeps saying and doing the wrong things along the way that make it hard for fans to fall in love with what the hell is happening, Victor Oladipo, and to kick ass on the court, Victor Oladipo, because, you know, he says he's opting out of the bubble and then he plays and he's non-committal the entire time. And then on the day of the game, finally decides to play. And then, you know, in the off season, we get the Athletic reporting that sources say he wants to not be with the Pacers anymore. And then the Indy Star report that he's in the middle of games telling other players that he wants to play for their team or something like that. Ironically, all three of the teams that he said that against the Pacers lost that game. So it could have been just some frustration, but definitely a terrible look. And then he comes out and makes a statement committing to the Pacers. Apparently his agent slammed the desk telling Kevin Pritchard he's committed to the Pacers. So who knows what is PR, what's real. But my take on the entire situation is that I think he actually likes Indiana and there is no extension currently in place for him because of his injury and how not good he was last year. But he also likes redacted teams 1, 2, and 3, maybe a little more, and wants to see what's out there for him, especially because this is more recent developments, but like Paul George signed an extension and all these rookies got big extensions and LeBron got an extension and Davis signed a long deal. All of a sudden, next year's awesome free agency class is gone. It's Giannis and Vic. So he could make a ton of money if he waits and plays well.
Excuse me, this is Andre Drummond erasure?
Excuse me. Drummond might be in the net top. He also is probably very happy with these developments, right?
Oh, no, 100%. And Gobert probably has a little more leverage now. Yep. Like there's a lot of guys that are winning from the higher level guys kind of making it right now.
Right. So I think Vic's situation is tough because, again, he does like Indiana, but because he likes these other teams more, probably it's kind of put him in a hard place to answer these questions appropriately. And he's done a really terrible job, to be honest, of the PR part and answering the questions. But if he's good in the season, a lot will be forgotten very quickly until free agency next summer. But given I may be being a little too harsh, but I mean, for the first like 15 games pre-bubble, he was actively bad. And then he was okay in the bubble. I'll give him okay. So we'll see how that turns out this year. That's kind of me shrugging and saying, we'll see.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is that I think an unsaid thing in all of the player empowerment stuff, which I'm mostly like good with. I'm pro the players and the labor like taking back some power from the owners.
Yeah,
because like the players make the league. Like the players make the league. How I just don't know if there's like an unlimited amount of guys. Like even if they're like a lead guy or have had like an all NBA season that like have the leverage they think they might to like go where they want to. I think there's a cap on it that where like it's actually successful. And I think Oladipo, just especially with the injury, kind of throwing a wrench into his career a little bit. Like I think he's probably like a little below where you think a guy can kind of force his way where he wants to. We'll see if I'm right. And we'll see if he ends up somewhere like anyway, but
I know I'm supposed to ask a question, but I'll do a sentence on that. Yeah, he's the name, right? So that's why this is all a story. But Jared Wade, you know, the godfather of Pacers Twitter for a while, you know, he always tweets like, why is this such a thing? Like, this is a lot to do about a player who is not good. You know what I mean? Like, if just like a normal starter from any other team was like not committing to his team, no one would know or care. But because he used to be good a long time ago, it's become a thing. It's like, this is a not good player making much to do about. But my turn to ask you a Cavs question, unless you want to go more on this. Okay.
No, hit me with it.
Cavs are mostly young. You know, I love the Okoro pick. We talked about Garland and Sexton. Kevin Porter Jr. was a standout last year. Indy native Dylan Windler going to finally play and shoot 57% from three this year. Excited about all that. Yeah, excited about all that. They also have a guy you just named Andre Drummond and a guy whose somehow name we haven't said yet, Kevin Love, on the team. And Drummond, he's good. He's probably not going to ruin your tank chances if both of them are clicking. They're probably a little too good and don't really fit this team's timeline at all. So what the hell is going to happen with those guys?
So I think there's two ways to kind of think about this. Number one, I think you need to – I don't think we know what kind of Drummond we're going to get yet. Like, he played 8 games or whatever with the Cavs last year. I have to throw all of that out from my thinking because, like, those games were weird. Like, John Beilein was still the coach when Andre Drummond came to Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, weird times. Everything was weird. Tristan Thompson was on the team yet. Then like Garland was hurt at the end of the year when the Cavs stopped playing. Like those are real concerns there. So like Drummond's going to shoot threes or whatever. And that's weird. If you can get the best version of Drummond, who's like can shoot like like a little below average at the rim. That's, he's never been actually like great at the rim. It's kind of one of the weirdest things to me about his career. Rebound a lot and like kind of be a good fit in the locker room. Like, I think you can maximize him. And maybe you flip him at the deadline. I think he's more likely to be traded than Kevin because Kevin's contract's so big. But I kind of think Kevin, tell me if you think this is like a crazy way to think of Kevin Love. I think of Kevin Love as like the ultimate kind of offensive glue guy. Like, he's going to space for you.
If you just watch how teams.
Okay. So, like, I understand that his contract is like probably more than you want to pay if he's on a really good team, but Kevin Love, get your back. Just get paid. Don't care. Like, you should take that contract. Okay. Like if you're going to be mad at anyone for that, and I feel like the way we talk about this is like the teams, like I think teams fail players more than we talk about. We just say like, oh, like Kevin Knox or whomever like didn't work out. Sorry, Kevin Knox, for you're catching a stray on this podcast. It has nothing to do with the Knicks, but like teams fail players more, or at least as much as I think as players just fail. Like, I think teams and culture and organizations play such a big part in that. And it's hard for us to, we don't always acknowledge that, I don't think. I'm saying collectively, like the we talking about basketball community. With Kevin Love, like, yes, he's probably making like too much money to be in like an optimal situation for where he is at age 32 if he's going to play at the highest level. But where he's at now, he's going to space the hell out of the floor. He's a really good passer. He's going to rebound really well. He's going to kickstart fast breaks where Colin Sexton can sprint up the sideline and catch a ball and like probably get an easy 2 points. Like, he's going to do a bunch for you on offense that is going to make everyone around him better. And that's like a functionally really good thing. I don't know like where, I can't think of like many good trade partners for him at this point. He's a guy that if like Giannis does the Supermax and some other stuff happens, like maybe a team is like, I guess we should just trade for Kevin Love now and like go that route. But if it doesn't happen, I think it's more likely that he would do a really kind of better. He could easily play the rest of this contract and just be like those. Him and Nance could just be like the really competent vets playing with the Cavs. Like, over Drummond, I think, has less likely of a chance to be with the team kind of going forward. I think Love could still be the guy because, again, I think the way I think of him now is that he's the ultimate offensive, like he's like an elite offensive glue guy that you could probably lean on a little more than you have, or you should try to lean on him more than you have so far.
Yeah, to me, I think Drummond is like top five most likely guys in the NBA to get traded this season, right? Whereas Love is not, but I do think their fits on a young team is interesting. And I've always kind of thought the Pacers aren't really a good example for me to air thoughts like these because they haven't had a top 10 pick or 5 pick, whatever, since 1989. But, you know, I think young teams always need a vet, right? So like Jared Dudley just bounces around and never plays because he's just like a great dude to have in the room all the time. So I'm very pro young teams like the Cavs having these guys. And that's why Dele's on the team. That's not exactly why Dele's on the team, but that's part of why Dele is on the team. And you need those guys, but you don't need a lot of them. And you don't need high paid ones of them who both are front court players. So I kind of just me as an outsider for the Cavs wonder what's coming for them in the short term and how they fit where the Cavs are at. But that answered a lot of my questions.
So here, I want to just ask you a Drummond follow-up. So the Cavs got him, and one of the reasons why I think I've wavered back and forth on this. I think the trade, which is like a second-round pick, which has, again, a low hit rate, and then like John Henson and Brandon Knight's expiring contract, neither of whom is like signed a contract, as far as I know, with an NBA team for the season, unfortunately for them. That was the price for Andre Drummond. That's like a ridiculous, like, even if you don't like think Drummond is like a super winning player, any of that stuff. And I tend to think that he's probably a little more empty calories than he is like a chicken breast and broccoli dinner or something. Like, I'm just throwing out wild analogies today. That's my vibe. Like, that's like a ridiculously low salary for like a player that does do some stuff that is really useful and has like made all-star teams and stuff.
Yeah,
isn't far removed from like what the Pistons people I've talked to have said is like was his apex. So like, if you can bring him in and like he helps you, that's fine. I think that and I think one of the reasons why it ends up being okay is like you didn't give up a future first for him, where you're like kind of being like, well, we gave up this cost controlled asset, now we might as well just pay the guy we traded that for. Like you can probably let him walk and it's not really a big a deal. The concern would be if you like overpay him and give him the max contract he probably wants. But I think like the deal is just like you gave up like nothing real for him, and tell me if you think I'm wrong here, but that just seems like fine, even if like you don't love Drummond the player.
No, that's great. That's a great trade. Like, it's like the, it's not exactly what we've seen from, I'm calling the Thunder model now, where you, you know, swing for the guy when he's low value, play him a ton, and then flip him again. You know, you get extra asset on top of that, but it's similar where you're giving up very little. And like Cody Zeller plus some young thing from Charlotte, if they think they're good halfway through the season, like makes all the sense in the world for Drummond. And then you've traded a second rounder for whatever asset you get from the Hornets, basically. And that's probably going to look like a steal for the Cavs, right? So I think you do that business 100 times out of 100. It's just a finicky situation right now in the very, very, very immediate present tense.
Yeah. It's weird. I think one of the things that will be interesting is like they've hinted at the fact that they're going to sit them on some back-to-backs. I wonder how you stagger them. I wonder how that changes your playing style when they're not playing. I think there's a lot of interesting kind of things to consider in that regard and seeing kind of how the Cavs approach that. But Tony, let's take one more break, come back, and we'll do one more question each here on Locked On Cavs. All right, Chris Manning, Tony East here, Locked On Cavs, Locked On Pacers crossover. Tony, my last question is this. I think the Pacers are probably like, and they're this team, like they're like sort of in their own little tier in the East where they are below like the top six. And then they're above like some of the teams competing for like the 7, 8, 9, 10 spots. Like, I think there's a world where like they can, or the 8, 9, 10 spots, like maybe they slip a little bit and they're in the play-in tournament in some way, but I think they're just sort of like a team in this middle ground of the Eastern Conference in a lot of ways. Obviously, you know, what happens with Oladipo is a big question. You know, what kind of coach, tell me how to pronounce the last name, because I feel like I mispronounced it.
Bjorkgren.
Bjorkgren. How good of coach Bjorkgren is will like matter. And we'll see, like you said, maybe like all the hype can still lead to coaches end up being bad. Like think about David Fizdale end up being like not a very good coach after having like a very promising kind of track record coming out of the Heat era. Stuff could not work out. Like, you know, what are you getting out of, like, a TJ Warren going to be like, is this foot thing going to nagging him the whole year? And that just hurts you. Right. What do you think this team actually is? As of right now, what is your best educated guess on what this team, how good this team actually can be?
Sure. So we on our show have similarly tiered the Pacers to you, but I'm gonna push back on it being a regular season standings tier and more of just like contend for the East title tier. You know, I think the six teams are above them, and I don't want to list them off because it just takes a lot of time. Everybody knows the East standings by now, but you know, are more likely to win a first round series in them. But the Pacers just culturally have always overperformed expectations in the regular season. Last year, they were a 50 something win pace team, and they're bringing back the exact same roster. They finished with a higher seed than the Heat last year and the Sixers, right? Like, obviously, the Sixers got a lot better, but who's to say that they don't get, even if they don't improve at all and the coach keeps them exactly the same, being in the mid-50s and wins makes, I guess the conference could be nuts, but I find it hard to believe that's going to be the 7 seed. You know, it's possible, but if every team in the NBA is trying to be decent this year, there's very few teams that are not trying to win games. I find it hard to believe that that's going to be the 7 seed. I think their regular season record could get them higher than that. Maybe not too much higher, but a little bit. I still don't think they have a great shot at winning in the first round, but I think that is where I push back on the tiers a little bit. But I don't think they have a great shot at winning a playoff series, even with the new coach. Yeah, I think that he could be awesome, right? The things he's saying sound like exactly what the Pacers need, given their roster construction. They need creativity to jazz up two centers at the same time. They need some weak side cutting to get some of their shooters more involved in actions, right? Brogdon taking an incredible dip in shooting percentage last year. Like, some of that was just his role being a lot more on the ball, but a lot of it was McMillan just could not set him up to succeed at all. And now they can actually set up their young guys, right? Bjorkgren's going to play Goga and Aaron Holiday more than McMillan did as well. So I think that where are the Pacers now, as you say, or what is going on? What is the state of the Pacers? Is there's like optimism and outlook about where they can go, but the overall questions is always just going to be, right, is Oladipo good this year, and is this two-center thing working? Because if Oladipo's not that good, they're kind of stuck because – they don't have an easy way to get up a tier without making a big trade. And they're probably going to lose him for nothing after he was an All-NBA player just two seasons ago. And the two centers, two awesome young assets they've had forever and held on to all this time, right? They'll probably have to trade Miles Turner if it doesn't work out with Bjorkgren. Maybe they'll trade Sabonis because his value is higher now than it might ever be, but I super doubt it. They probably waited too long to do that too. I mean, I think trying the two centers thing made all the sense in the world. So I'm not going to kill them for that one, but they're in an interesting spot where this is kind of a pivotal season because it's Oladipo's last year and they're standing in the East is a little odd. So I'm very much looking forward. I would call their situation pivotal right now, to answer the question, because it's going to be super interesting for both the future of the team and many players, how they perform this year under a new coach.
Yeah. I'll just say this before we get to the last Cavs question is I look at the situation with the Pacers as kind of like an example of like what the Cavs could do, right? Like, I don't think the Cavs necessarily are this team that like are like ownership, I think, differs in sort of how comfortable they are and where they could end up in the East. I think that's certainly kind of part of the differences between Cleveland and Indiana in terms of franchises. But I think as in terms of like a franchise that ends up sort of like being a playoff team every year and then is trying to just like find ways to maximize that team every year, I think that's like that's a reasonable kind of goal for the Cavs to get to in time, even if it's not like the most fun thing in the world, right? You know?
Yeah.
Like that is not the most like fun thing if you're a fan in the world. I sort of understand fun, that. But
yes, I get it.
No, but as like a soccer fan, I think it's great because you're just sort of like I think the idea of like championship or bust as success is like quite silly. Yes, I think that's just dumb. You can be like a really successful franchise and like compete for things even if you don't win the ultimate thing every year. I think all or nothing is sort of a bleak way of being a fan, being a team, whatever. But the Pacers as like a template for this in terms of how they're approaching this and what they're doing, I think is just a really interesting thing to follow from a Cleveland team that I think wouldn't hate a franchise that wouldn't hate kind of being a version of what Indiana kind of what their ethos is in terms of being solid every year, competing every year. And, you know, you're trying to maybe you get a couple of years where you get to really run at it with some good luck and roster development and things. But other, you're never like totally like a crap team for an extended period of time.
Yeah, and then, you know, Kevin Durant tears his Achilles and Klay Thompson gets hurt and all of a sudden, like, you peak at the right time and boom, you know, I'm not saying the Raptors got lucky. I'm just saying, like, injury timing and trade timing, it just, like, they were the...
Every single NBA team that wins a title gets lucky. The Cavs got lucky. Yeah. Draymond got suspended in 2016. Like, that's just part of it.
I'm not even calling it luck. I'm just saying, like, the Raptors model of okay, they had Kyle and they had DeMar and they said, we're going to keep trying this. We're going to keep being really good. And then finally, the two big things, the Kawhi trade timing and the injuries happen at the same time. Boom, you have a title. Like, you just – I think fans are just too impatient, and I'm with you that rings culture is terrible. And now I will flip my question, which is kind of similar to your Pacers question here. And you kind of just hinted into this answer. But what's the Cavs playoff timeline right now? Because I think Sexton said this offseason – I forget exactly who the interview was with, but that he wants to make the playoffs this year, right? I don't think the Cavs are quite a playoff team then now. But they're not very far off, right? They've got the good young stuff. They've got good fitting young stuff now that Okoro's in the door. They're probably a piece or two away.
So I think that's a fair question. I think they would like to tell you that they have a chance to try and be competitive this year. And I think that's crazy. Like, I think that is downright insane of the Cavs to think that that is possible. I think they can be more competitive. I think they can be a more competent franchise in a lot of ways, but I do not think that this is a team or a franchise that, like, really has a chance to kind of compete for the playoffs or the play-in tournament this year. I think you're hoping that you're getting there in a couple years. I don't think they want to wait, like, 5 years to get to the playoffs. I don't think they want to wait 3 years to get there. But I don't think next year is realistic. I don't think, you know, next season, if you get like a Cade Cunningham or an Evan Mobley, is even like a lock to kind of push you into that area. They would be like happy if they can make the play-in tournament or something this year. I don't think it's likely. I don't think most people think it's likely. I think for me, best case is like 2-3 years from now. And I think it could be longer than that if things don't kind of develop in the way you're hoping. If bad lottery luck, you know, Sexton gets hurt, something like that. Like, if you have concerns with some of your guys, ultimately, like, that ends up maybe becoming a problem. And then you're kind of like going to be on that treadmill of mediocrity as you kind of figure stuff out. Like if Darius Garland is really bad this year, things are going to get bleak. And like you basically wasted a top five pick on a guy that ultimately turned out to not be very good if he doesn't work out. So like I have questions about like how slowly they're willing to hold their foot from going on the gas. Like if they're driving on the highway right now, they're in the right-hand lane, they're going at the appropriate speed, But this is an organization that historically has been willing to just like throw it into turbo and like go ham and go way too fast and do something stupid. Like the last time they, like just as a reference point, the last time they were here without LeBron, the summer, the year before they got him, they spent a bunch of money in the offseason on Earl Clark, Andrew Bynum, and Jarrett Jack. And then none of those guys were on the team by the start of next season. And they had to trade all of them in moves to with attaching draft picks to make the grease of those wheels move. That is just like dumb. And I think Kobe Altman's smarter than that. I think Dan is taking a little bit of a step back a little bit. But I think we're in a position where they need to be patient and we'll see how willing they are. But I would bet you 2 to 3 years. And I think frankly, that's okay. Because I think if you're looking at what the best way to actually build your franchise is, it's to get one of those like studs that are supposedly in the draft next year, whether it's Cunningham, Mobley, Jalen Suggs, whomever you think that guy is and wherever you draft, if you can get one of those guys, maybe that guy is the one that turbocharges what you're doing. Like maybe you develop this interesting young core with Sexton, Garland, like a couple of these guys hit. And maybe Okoro hits right away and stuff. And then you have Nance, who's like you have Love, and you have these good kind of vets that are still useful. And then you plug in like a young superstar, and then maybe you can hit the turbo button in a way that kind of can get you there. But I think at the earliest, it's next year, and it's probably longer than that.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I remember Sexton's comments at the time being like, I guess, but probably not. But that'll make sense to me, that distance out. Seems more reasonable. You know, it seems like eventually the Lowry era will end. I mean, maybe not, but eventually, right, there's a team that you can suddenly catch. And the Hawks are kind of growing too, but someone else will fall off. The NBA is cyclical like that, or someone will demand a trade. Who knows?
But I want to ask you about this. For this year, do you think the Cavs are – where do you think the Cavs are in terms of the bottom of the East? I think they're probably better than New York and that would have been a wild plot twist. I think they're better than Detroit, and I think they're better than the Knicks. Do you think that's fair?
We just did our NBA preview on our show earlier this week, and I have them exactly the same as you, better than those two teams. But I can see them being better than the Bulls. I just don't.
No, I think the Bulls have like better talent overall, probably. Agreed. And Billy Donovan's like a really good coach, like very, that's very true. Good coach.
All right. Fair enough. But yes, I have them definitely 1,000 times better than the Pistons. Like they could go 4-0 against the Pistons, and then the better Pistons than
the secretly just like tanking is just like the like we actually just are getting all these power forwards and paying Jeremy Grant.
There is no secret to it.
Hey, I mean, salute to Jeremy Grant for getting the bag. Yeah. but that's going to do it, Tony. This was fun. Glad we got to do this. Glad we'll get to link up again throughout the season. And I'm happy we get to hit some Midwest-y kind of Central Division, even though Central Division rivalry stuff is kind of dumb, that I'm very excited to kind of see what we're going to get here this weekend. I'm very excited to see what the basketball looks like and how it looks on TV and all this kind of stuff. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. And I'm thrilled that there's games back, even though that's selfish and it's probably dangerous, but I am selfishly thrilled basketball is back. And I actually am looking forward to, just in general, for maybe a future model of the NBA, the series style, right? This preseason will be the first debut of that. They'll play 2 games in the same market 3 days apart. So maybe a way to reduce travel and improve the quality of games. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it.